You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Tell me something, my friend.
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the role?
Ladies and gentlemen!
Your complete attention, if you please.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. We have a ton, and I mean a literal ton, of content to cram into this week's episode. So much so that we couldn't do this alone, Justin.
Nope. It's not possible. We had to summon him. We had to get down on our knees and actually pray to him in order for him to come grace us with his presence.
That is true. So, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right, because when you need to cram something in, you know who to call.
Good God in heaven.
You're not my dad.
You sure are feisty this evening.
He is.
Well, I'm celebrating my I'm sure, very long-awaited return to the show.
I would say so.
Well, gentlemen, it's a pleasure, as always.
Welcome the God of podcasting. Now he gets to hear his own voice in its godlike etherealness.
Godlike.
I want to see kid get strangled.
There he is. So, yes, Loy Sauce is here this evening because he and Justin got the chance to see a movie they're going to talk about a little bit later. Loy Sauce also got to see some other movies that he is going to talk about later. I am going to just sit here like a monkey pushing buttons on my soundboard trying to derail both of them. But we'll see where the show goes.
Well, what did you do? What did you even do? Because I know you didn't watch the Super Bowl. Because you said you don't get CBS. So what the hell did you even do?
I did nothing. I did some work for Livestream for the Cure this weekend. I got a lot of stuff for Livestream for the Cure done this weekend, which is really nice. Going to have more about that in just a moment here. But other than that, no, I didn't get a chance to watch anything. I did watch 1995's Species and the David Cronenberg 1996 film Crash, which is easily one of the most bizarre films I have seen in a decade. Jesus.
That's Cronenberg for you.
Jesus H. Christ. There is a leg vagina.
Yeah.
There is tattoo sucking, jizz on hands. It's weird. And there's a lot of nudity in it. And it gets really uncomfortable at one point, and then it just floors the throttle. Compared to the rest of it, I went over on So I Married a Movie Geek with Justin and Chrissy, and they are amazing. I absolutely love them, and I love being on the show. And we always have to do some kind of weird, sexy, erotic thing because we got together for 50 Shades, and that's just like our thing, I think. It just, my God in heaven. It was a lot of fun recording with them, though. That episode is already out, so you can check that out. The link will be down in the show notes, so please give that a listen. It was a wonderful, fun time. It was hilarious. But
I'll be giving that a listen for sure.
My God,
I will say that Crash is a much more erotic film than any of the 50 Shades films.
Then
again,
Species has,
most things are more erotic than the 50
Species
Shades
has,
movies.
Species has titty snakes, so there's that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was basically my weekend was doing that. I got to record another episode of Thoughts and Players, which will be out sometime whenever Caleb gets that done. That was a lot of fun. And I'll be recording with Gerald from 2P's Top 5 Tarantino Characters coming up. So I've been...
Well, we're just whoring ourselves out to Gerald, man. I'll be over there later this week doing Top 5 Remakes. So
Gerald has yet to hit me up. Gerald, my man.
Man.
So, you know, unfortunately, some bad news hit in the movie realm last week. Iconic character actor Dick Miller passed away at the age of 91 years old from congestive heart failure and a heart attack. For those of you unaware of who Dick Miller was, he was a Roger Corman regular. Yes, Nick.
He messaged me about it earlier today, and I was like, who's that?
Gremlins, The Terminator, The Howling, The Original Little Shop of Horrors, Demon Knight, Bucket of Blood. I mean, I could literally go down the list. And
I
there's
looked
like,
up a picture of him afterward. Like, he looks familiar to me, but I certainly...
He's done over...
He's definitely one of those character actors that, you know, I'm sure... And I haven't seen any of those movies in a long time, so it's probably why it's not really popping for me.
He's done over 200 movies, and the thing is, there's Jesus. Actually a documentary about him, which I highly recommend to all of our listeners out there right now, called That Guy Dick Miller. And it's called That Guy Dick Miller, Nick, because he's that guy in movies. He knows he's that guy in movies that shows up, and you're like, hey, I know that guy, but you don't know his name, or you don't know anything about him. You just, his face
he's
is familiar.
He's that guy. Yeah.
He's that guy. It's a very, very precious, heartwarming documentary that he and his wife are in, and all of the people they could get that ever... got him involved in movies. Joe Dante. I mean, he was just as in many Joe Dante movies as he was Roger Corman movies. And it, you know, it's sad. He's an old guy. He lived a great life. He had a great career in movies.
200 plus movies. Shit, yeah.
Yeah, it's still sad to see him go. So, you know, he's just that guy. When I think my childhood, I'm thinking The Burbs, Gremlins, The Terminator. He just shows up in like everything, literally.
I think my favorite performance of his is the one that I saw most recently, which was Tales from the Crypt Presents Demon Knight.
Oh, he's all good in it, dude.
I'd never seen that before, and Justin, you and I watched it together, and he is just so great in that movie. So yeah, rest in peace, Dick Miller.
Yeah, he got to actually get some great makeup done on that movie, and he got to turn evil for those
of
you.
And he got to be surrounded by topless babes, too, for that one scene.
Yeah, where he walks in and just tons of hotties around him. I mean, I think his wife wasn't very fond of him doing that scene. But yeah, so
Yeah, he had a good time doing that, though. That was my Facebook cover photo. It was him surrounded by all those buxom women. But yeah.
He could have just used one of the many photos he has of himself surrounded by many buxom women, but I said buxom women. couldn't even come in for the solid landing there. Oof.
I appreciate you trying though, Nick. That really means a lot.
That's all that matters is that I really,
it's the
really
thought that counts.
Yeah. Tried.
So yeah, rest in peace, Dick Miller. Yeah, I had to have that moment where Justin was like, I want to talk about Dick Miller. I was like, who?
Whoomst?
But again,
and
he then, was
yeah. That guy I said to watch movies, some so movies.
That he did say watch some movies. That was his exact message to me, was watch some movies. But yeah, I'm seeing Lego 2 this weekend. Even though I already told Loisos before we recorded, I said I haven't seen the first one yet, and I'm not going to get the chance to before
Man,
that.
I feel like you got to see the Lego Movie 1 before you see 2.
I promise you,
but
I will try. I will do my very, very best to try to squeeze it in there somewhere. And give it a watch before Thursday, because I'm going straight out of work and straight to the theater, and I'm going to watch it in 3D. And I loved Lego Batman mostly,
okay.
So I'm excited to see this one, because I don't know, Lego movies are
so
just
are you
in now.
Like so are you going just to go, or is your wife wanting to go, or
no,
why,
I'm going
why
just
are
to go.
You? Oh.
You know what the sad thing is I
why
have not
wait until you can see the first one before you see the second one.
Listen, I don't ask me for logic on this, all right?
Okay, I'm just saying.
See, I want to see a kid get to catch. No, I just wanted to go see it. I haven't been to the theater enough, I don't think, since the new year really started. Oh, hi, microphone.
You haven't been missing all that much, though.
Well, no, the problem is a lot of stuff hasn't been opening up here at all. Like,
yeah.
The Oscar nominations came out. They finally put Green Book's playing, which I still haven't seen. Vice is playing, which I'd rather have a nuclear missile detonated inside of my dick hole than ever watch again. oh, and The Favorite's playing up there, which I almost want to see The Favorite again on the big screen, because the screener that I watched was just not the best quality. So I would much rather probably check that out again in a much better, higher quality format, because when you have like sub DVD quality, it just doesn't lend itself well enough to what Lanthimos did in the film, especially with use of all natural lighting. So
yeah,
I may try to check that one out again with the AMC stubs if I can find the time, which, like I said, has been a little shortcoming recently.
You've been busy.
But live stream for The Cure 3, I want to get it out of the way here at the beginning of the show. We've got two more promos coming for live stream for The Cure partners. It's going to be absolutely amazing. May 17th through the 19th, 40 hours of content, $7,500. Justin's going to touch his nipples, I think. It's going to be... That's what he always does when he wears his fucking tank top. But it's going to be absolutely amazing. $7,500 for the Cancer Research Institute. go to livestreamforthecure.com for more information on the event. We're going to be doing recorded promos probably within the next couple of weeks, getting those out there so you guys can start hearing them. Justin's working on the artwork diligently, I hope, as I glare at him. He's just, man, crickets. I wasn't fast enough on the button there. But yeah, Justin's going to work on the artwork, and we've got a lot of amazing shows signing up, some returning from last year, some brand new to the event, and we've still got a lot of opening. We've still got a lot of openings for programming. So if you want to get involved, head over to livestreamforthecure.com, check out the spreadsheet, check out what's still available, and get in touch with me on Twitter at livestream4cure. That's livestream the number 4 and cure. So I'm going to go away for a bit and just be quiet, because I didn't do anything else this week. This is it. That was all me at the beginning, and then that's it. So I'm just going to sit here and stare at Justin's tattoos.
But Loisos,
no, put you the nipples have seen. Away. Not the nipples.
I'm pulling them out. God. Listen, I'm pulling them out. I just did chest tonight at the gym, okay? Right before we recorded, I was down at the gym pumping those flies, dumbbell press.
Hey, you know, over there.
I got to let them out. And no, that's not allowed tonight.
Hey, you're over there.
You're not coming here. We're not allowing you into our safe space. Nope, it's not happening. Because you know what? The LaCroix is still in hand. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Ooh. It's not happening.
I'm so exhausted. Like, I went to bed right when I got home from work because my eyes were really bugging me. And I woke up right before the show. And I don't even have a beer. I just was like, I can't drink beer right now because I'd probably just face plant. I have a beer.
Oh, my God. This is the only time ever where this will happen, where you and I are totally sober, but Loisos actually has a beer.
Hey.
That means he gets his very own.
I'm back. Puke and rally. Yeah. Woo! Give me a beer.
Man, I miss hearing that sound drop. And do you know what the new mixer also affords me to do? We were talking about this before recording, but not only do I not have audio bleed, I can also just play drops now because the sound is so much cleaner. I don't have to replace them in post. I love it. But yeah, Loisos, since you have alcohol.
Shocking, I know.
I gotta know, man. What are you funneling into your face fucker hole? It's been a few weeks with the drinking.
Very apt description. Thank you, Nick. So I'm drinking a Saint Boniface. It's a 3-pound IPA. As fans of the show, and you guys know, I'm no fan of IPAs, but you know what? It's not bad. The hops are there, obviously. I'm not a fan of hoppy beer, but it has a little bit of a fruity taste, a little hint of grapefruit in there that's very refreshing, actually. So, yeah. I'm drinking a beer tonight.
Wow. Is he putting us to shame, Justin? Is this what the Epic Film Guys is now? You're drinking LaCroix. I think I have water around here somewhere, but.
I did have a few beers on Saturday.
Be quiet.
I did. It happened.
Cool.
With me, right?
Well, I had one with you, but earlier that day, I said I did over 30 days. I did over a month, and I felt like going to Crooked Run Brewing here in Sterling and having a few with the wife, and I did, and I enjoyed them. But key thing is, I'm not sure I can make it part of my normal schedule just yet again, and we'll see how that works out. But I did enjoy the beers I had. I sent you a picture, Nick. I had a delicious Oreo milk stout.
Dude,
that
beer
looked
insane. That beer looked incredible.
Yep. So that was good, but
I also enjoy a good can of PBR.
You know what? That's an idea, too. I may even go with that in the future. But Loisos, I'm very proud of you, even though you are kind of late to the game on this because of all those other episodes that I complained and bitched at you for not having a beer. Now you finally bring one, and we're not having one. But
there you go.
Again, the thought counts. So
there you go.
Why don't you tell us, you did have an opportunity to see a few movies that Nick and I have not. Nick just mentioning the Lego sequel. You saw it. What did you think?
I did see it. I am of the opinion that the original Lego movie that came out in 2014 is a masterpiece. Leading up to it, I thought that it was going to be crap, you know? Like, it just looked like a bunch of random shit thrown onto the screen. I thought it looked so unbelievably cynical. And then I went to see the movie, and it turned out to be incredibly charming and witty and clever and heartwarming. And so the sequel kind of gives you more of the same because it picks up directly from where the original left off. But it doesn't quite reach that height that the original had. Phil Lord and Chris Miller are back writing the script and producing. They did not direct the film.
Right.
So it has that trademark Lord and Miller wit. It's extremely fast-paced. I feel like a lot of the jokes flew by me the first time because there's so many visual... I mean, it's a lot to take in. It's so unbelievably colorful, and there's so much going on the screen. I liked the inclusion of... there are several songs in the film. It's a musical, kind of. And when you see the movie, you kind of understand why that is exactly, because I guess this isn't a spoiler necessarily for Nick. He hasn't seen the first one, but I literally, when the credits came up and it says original songs by John LaJoie, I literally stood up in the cinema and went, what? Oh my God. Because John LaJoie is a comedian and YouTuber that I've loved, you know, ever since YouTube first started. He posted songs on his YouTube channel, such as, you know, Show Me Your Genitals and I Kill People and songs such as that. So to see his name on the big screen and doing original songs for the Lego Movie too, that was a very big moment for me. But yeah, it doesn't quite hit that that height that the first movie had. The novelty of saying, oh, here's Lego Batman, here's, you know, this... here's Lego Star Wars, all of these characters kind of coming together, and it was cool, the novelty of it the first time, and it doesn't quite capture that same magic this time around. There is Lego Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and there are a couple of Lego cameos that I will not spoil, because one of them especially had the theater going absolutely insane. So definitely if you have kids, this is a movie that will that kids will just absolutely love, and there's plenty of stuff that adults can appreciate too.
What would you give it as far as a rating is concerned?
Oh man, that's tough. Because the original, again, for me is like a 10 out of 10. I think it's just like a brilliant piece of work. I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8. I feel like I need to see it again before I stamp a final number on it, but enjoy it. It's very fast paced and entertaining, and the animation of course is just like, I can't even, the level of detail going into the animation, because whenever there's like a wave of water or a spurt of a flame, like all of that is made out of Lego, and it's just, it's on the screen for a split second, and it's I don't even know how they did it, to be honest. I mean, the animators must have had they must have been working overtime.
That's
or something.
A tricky one. I remember the first time I saw the original, and I was very much like you. I wasn't as cynical about it, but I was not really optimistic about it. I was still taking my daughter to movies like that because she was younger and still enjoying animated fare. And I saw it and I loved it. I cried during it, and I was like, well, I can't believe it. I was like utterly shocked at how I felt about it. I really did love the movie. But just seeing that technology and how slick it looks, and there's no flaws in it at all whatsoever. It just looks beautiful. And I think they even improved upon that with the Lego Batman movie, which I also enjoyed. Whether I'll see the new one or not is yet to be seen. But you also saw another movie. You saw another
animated movie. Yes.
That's right. That we haven't seen.
Review, monkey, review.
Yes, review.
Yes, sir.
You saw How to Train Your Dragon 3.
Well, actually, it's called How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Justin.
But it is whatever.
It is the third installment of the How to Train Your Dragon film series. And the first How to Train Your Dragon came out when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, and it had a huge impact on me. These films are some of the most visually stunning animated films ever. Roger Deakins served as a visual consultant on all three, I believe. It's pretty standard boy and his blank fair. This happens to be boy and his dragon. But the bond that Hiccup, the young Viking, and his dragon Toothless have in the films is just so beautiful to watch. And to watch it grow and develop over three films has been quite a treat, because I feel like a lot of animated franchises like Toy Story. I told Nick before we started recording, I think I'm going to refuse to watch Toy Story 4. I don't think I'm going to go see it.
I'll guarantee you'll see it because I'll force you to see it.
No.
I'll drag you in that theater and make you see it.
My God.
I don't want to see it because there's no story to be told, no matter what Pixar and Disney say. It's my own personal belief that the door has closed on Toy Story. And I respect that this franchise, the How to Train Your Dragon franchise, is seemingly, at least for now, gracefully bowing out and ending on a high note. Because I thought, even though I feel like this is the weakest of the three, the last act of it, the last 10 or 15 minutes of it, completely broke me. As someone who has watched this series over, you know, the past 8 years, kind of watching the curtain kind of come down on it, it's because it's a pretty definitive end, it seems like, it was pretty emotional for me. It kind of took me by surprise. That bond between Hiccup and Toothless is so well defined. It's a dragon.
You love dragons. We know you love dragons.
I do love dragons. So maybe it's like a wish fulfillment kind of thing for me.
You want your own dragon.
I want a dragon. I want to, because he's Toothless is so cute. He's like a little cat with wings. I don't know. I adore him. The animation is on another level. John Powell's score is exhilarating. I will say that the villain kind of felt a little bit like a rehash of the villain from the previous film. Just someone who wants to hunt down dragons and kill dragons. And I'm like, yeah, we've seen that. I also felt that the comedic relief in this one was especially obnoxious. I know they have to have Jonah Hill and Kristen Wiig and all these supporting cast members do their thing. But to me, it kind of broke the tension of a lot of scenes when it's like an exciting action scene and then you have one of the side characters say something stupid and you're like, oh, like that kind of deflates the tension a little bit for me. One of the characters is so annoying, it's used as a plot point, which is kind of bizarre. There's one scene where the villain captures Kristen Wiig's character and she annoys him so much that he lets her go. And I'm like, that's... I think they thought that would be funny, but it's just annoying. So there are things like that that kind of kept me from rating this one as high as I would the previous two. Because again, like the first one, if the first one is Star Wars, then How to Train Your Dragon 2 is like The Empire Strikes Back. And this is definitely The Return of the Jedi. You can kind of take that as you will.
Means there's piece of shit little fuzzy things in it that you just want to die.
Well, I think the comedic relief side characters are this film's equivalent to the Ewoks.
Boom.
But
Justin.
I'm not the one that hates the Ewoks. Keep me out of this.
I don't hate the Ewoks either, but I know what Nick is referring to, so
stop ganging up on me.
Yes, Denny.
Oh, hi Denny. Yeah, no. I was completely broken by the end of the movie. It's incredibly powerful the way it ends, and the way it ends seemingly definitively. At least I hope for now that there will be no more How to Train Your Dragon films, and we will have a great trilogy on our hands here.
Now we're going to get into the dragon expanded universe with a whole bunch of
dragon
movies.
I mean, they've had TV shows and they've had spinoffs and all that kind of thing, but there have been three great How to Train Your Dragon movies. I'm not going to give anything away here, obviously, but the movie kind of goes into why we don't see dragons anymore. And the whole plot of the movie is them trying to find a hidden world where the dragons can live sequestered and free of
Of Justin.
Villains such as F. Murray Abraham's character in the film, who is the Justin. Antagonist. So, and Justin. Well, one more thing I want to say, and this is a personal. This is a personal thing. It's a personal preference. I know it's a kids' movie. It's rated PG. The characters wield swords and axes in the film, and there are dragons with large teeth in the film, and I just wanted to see some more death. That's all. The action sequences are very slapstick heavy.
I want to see a kid get decapitated.
Absolutely. I want to see a dragon bite a guy's like upper body off.
I can't even imagine watching a movie like that, because I've yet to see any of these, though. To let me see the brand new 4K Ultra HD versions, which you yourself purchased. Yes. I've never seen any of these, but for me, I think of dragon, and then I think of dragon biting somebody in half or burning them to death with the flame from their mouth. Then flying around with awesome wings.
Kill him, hang him, hit him.
I get that there are Q creatures in this, but seeing dragons and not seeing them cause massive destruction is kind of defeating the purpose to me.
Well, yes. So the first one especially has like a really awesome dragon antagonist. Like there's no human antagonist in the first How to Train Your Dragon. It's this huge monstrous beast that they have to stop. And that's a big force of nature, and that's a real threat. And in the second one, there's a villain. And in the third one, there's a villain. And it just kind of gets a little bit stale. And you just want to see, because, you know, these characters have axes and they're throwing axes around, but they just hit, you know, with the
butt of the axe.
With the butt of the axe. And it's very slapstick and there's cartoon sound effects. And I'm like, I want to see, I want to see blood on screen, but it's a PG rated film. Yeah, so it's personal.
He is just bloodthirsty. He can't.
I am.
Every
I don't
movie
know what
he
that
goes
is
to,
about
he
me.
Wants it to be like borderline NC-17 levels of gore.
And Nick, again, we were talking about this before we started recording. I think the root of all of that comes from me reading The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books when I was a young child and being exposed to horrific imagery when I was a wee lad. I would also give How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World a 7 or an 8 out of 10. I don't know. I'm
Make
being
up your
wishy-washy.
Damn mind here. Make up your
I'm
mind. Is it a 7 or is it an 8? It sounds like a 7 to me based on what you're saying. If it's a Return of the Jedi, that would be a 7. Am I right or am I wrong?
It has its annoying elements. I thought the comedic relief was pretty obnoxious the whole way through. But the highs of the film are enough to lift it above all of that. So I'd give it an 8.
Ooh,
well, I'll be generous and give it an 8.
There it is.
Damn. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot more show to get into here. When we come back from our break, we're going to take a quick break for one of our live stream for The Cure podcast partners. Justin and the Saus are going to get into a little bit of Velvet Buzzsaw right after this.
Do you love a good story? If you do, check out Stories of Yore and Yours. I'm Sean Ennis, and each week on Stories of Yore and Yours, I narrate a classic short story, adding music and sound effects to bring those stories new life. The back catalog features stories by the likes of Edgar Allan Poe, Kurt Vonnegut, Rudyard Kipling, Mark Twain, Ray Bradbury, and many more. And in addition to classic short stories, I feature original stories by you, the listener. So if you do love a good story, give Stories of Yore, that's Y-O-R-E, and Yours, that's Y-O-U-R-S, a listen today. And visit the show at SYY Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to submit your own stories, requests for classic short stories, or just to say hi. That's Stories of Yore and Yours, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, Justin and the Sauce.
Why, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, Nicholas. I can't believe I'm having so much fun being so sober. I love you guys. We are sitting down to review Netflix's brand new film by Dan Gilroy, Velvet Buzzsaw, which if you listened to last week to the show, you'll know that it was on my top 10 most anticipated of the year. Yep, for good reason. Dan Gilroy wrote and directed Nightcrawler, which is, in my opinion, one of the best movies of the past six years. It came out in 2014 with one of my favorite performances of all time.
Well, he didn't even get nominated for an Oscar, so it couldn't have been that
great. He didn't get nominated for anything.
Couldn't have been that great. Come on.
It was amazing. And I know Loy Sauce agrees with me. I still think it's Gyllenhaal's best performance, but Gyllenhaal's also in Velvet Buzzsaw, okay? And he plays a character named Worf Vandewalt, who is a bisexual art critic. After a series of paintings by an unknown artist are discovered by an intern at an art dealer, supernatural forces enact revenge on those who have followed their greed to get in the way of art. Yeah. Listen to that premise. It sounds amazing. Thinking of that premise, the amount of talent involved in this movie, all the great actors in this movie, you'd think it was going to be brilliant.
So I'll just jump right in there and say, well, let us share in a moment of silence for the wasted potential in Velvet Buzzsaw.
Yeah, I got to agree
I
with you, man.
Moment of silence, damn it.
Hey, you over there.
Quiet, you. Moment of silence.
I thought you said moment of silence. It would be like a second. I gave you a second. I counted it.
We need a full, a solemn...
Okay, let's do it now. Let's do it now.
Fuck you.
Okay, that's enough. Oh, man. Okay, well, Justin, did it live up to being one of your most anticipated films of the year?
It will definitely land on probably one of my most disappointed movies of the year. But I'm being a little bit rough. I did not hate Velvet Buzzsaw, but I do agree with your sentiment that it was probably not a waste, but I think it's a waste. It didn't live up to anything half of where they could have gone with it.
No.
And I hate to compare it to Nightcrawler because I usually don't like to do that. But that movie like set the bar for Gilroy pretty high. And with this movie, it doesn't have that kinetic energy to it that Nightcrawler had. I know it's about a completely different world, and the world of fine art, which I myself am very interested in. The wife and I go to plenty of museums. We've gone every city we go to, usually we'll go look at art, modern art, classic
They showed
art.
The Broad Museum in the film, and I'm like, hey, I was just there in L.A., the Broad Museum in L.A. They showed it, and I was like, ah, that's cool. Yeah, and there's potential because the whole conceit of the film is like a supernatural force like that causes paintings and art installments to kill people. And I'm like, that's so cool.
That premise
that's
just
a
sounds
cool premise.
Like the coolest thing ever, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you love horror, like I do, and you love art.
This ain't no horror movie.
No, it definitely isn't at all. And I think that's one of the main issues that a lot of horror fans are going to have. It lacks
anything.
heavy brutality. There's a couple of scenes with some suspense, but it's not really... the impact is very little when it's provided.
I view this film as more of a satire than anything else.
It's definitely a satire.
Which, yeah, I mean, there are definitely moments of acerbic kind of humor. Like, I love that scene. There are a couple moments that I really loved. I loved when the guy walks into the art gallery and there's a pile of trash bags in the middle of the floor and he stops to observe and he's like, how bold.
How bold or something. He's like, that's just trash. Malkovich is just like, that's just trash.
And I'm like, okay, that's funny.
I laughed out loud pretty hard at that scene.
And there's that scene where they're at a funeral and Jake Gyllenhaal's like, what is this organ music? Like, did he buy the coffin for sale? Like,
yeah, he's complaining about the color of the coffin. Yeah, now, I will say funny. This much. I think that what holds this movie up and keeps it entertaining and interesting for me to watch is Gyllenhaal. Here, back again in full force, really trying to make this Morph Vandewalt. I mean, listen to that name, Morph Vandewalt. They really went out of their way to come up with the most pretentious, stupid name they possibly could. But it
well,
fits
all
that.
The characters' names are ridiculous.
Yes,
like
Redora Hayes is another one played by Rene Russo, who's very, very good in the movie. And there is a girl named Coco. Yes, her name is Coco. I know that's a real name.
Played by the love of my life, Natalia Dyer. I love her. And she was great in this, too.
But I'm going to go back to what I said about Jake, though. I think he's just brilliant in this role. And he's giving an over-the-top performance, but it's not so over-the-top where you know he's playing it for laughs. It's just under that level where it's like, we're laughing at him. We know he's such a great performer, and he's amazing in this role. But you can't help but chuckle at some of the stuff he's saying. And I love the satire on the world of fine art and the people involved with fine art and how pretentious they can be and how money hungry and greedy they can be. And also how they play around with critics in general. I feel like this could have been any kind of critic. This could have been a movie critic for whatever. And, he's just very, very harsh and he's very opinionated. And he second guesses himself later on, you know?
But that's the thing, too. That's another example of wasted potential, is that you could have done something really interesting and said something really interesting about criticism and the psychology of criticism and how it affects not just the object of criticism, but the criticizer of the critic.
Well, it kind of did that a little bit. I know it didn't
did. It barely touched the surface. There's that scene where he's kind of being haunted by his own reviews.
That's a very, very strong scene. So I think I'd probably disagree with you. I'd have to say I thought that scene was enough now that I think about it.
They could have played on it way more.
They could have, but this movie had to juggle a handful of characters. Now,
which it didn't have to. Why is half these people in this movie?
Well, this is one of my biggest criticisms of the movie. The character of Josephina, played by Zoe Ashton.
Awful.
I thought she was horrible in the movie.
Awful performance.
Absolutely awful. Could not wait till she wasn't on screen. And she didn't. I'm not sure if she's good in anything else she's been in, but I just didn't think she physically or personality-wise fit this character. I know she's supposed to be like an intern at this art dealer. And in my opinion, I would have to assume she'd be more attractive. And that's me being a little more superficial. But I found her to be very awkward looking half the time.
That's kind of mean, Justin.
She's got a very, very strange look on her face. I'm not just saying her natural look. I'm saying as well as like the look on her face half the time. The way
there
she portrayed
scenes where
the
she
character.
Like, there were scenes where like she was like crying. And I'm like, why are you crying? Why do you have tears in your eyes? That doesn't make any sense for the character. And also, I feel like the movie should have focused on her as the main character. Like, if she were...
Well, she wasn't interesting enough. That's why.
Well, she wasn't interesting enough, and the movie is kind of about Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, I would say that Jake Gyllenhaal is the main character in the film, but this intern character, she's the one who kind of sets this plot into motion.
She's the one that finds the art of this guy that dies in her apartment building. And
I'm like,
she steals it all.
Yeah, I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal could have easily have done the same thing. Stumbled upon the guy's apartment, found the art, stolen it. Like, why did it have to be her? Why was she even in the movie? Why was John Malkovich in this movie?
I don't know, but I loved the line where he was like, and this is a guy who's been sober for a long time, and he walks up and he grabs a glass of bourbon off a tray, just nonchalantly, not even looking at it, and just chugs it. And he's like, I should have never stopped drinking. Because he's no longer a popular artist compared to this deep stuff that's just revolutionary in the minds of, you know, art critics and art lovers. But we got to get down to the nitty gritty of this thing. This thing's supposed to be spooky. This thing's supposed to be scary. You know, it ain't. No, it's not at all. Now, that's not to say there aren't some great scenes. We keep forgetting that Toni Collette's in this thing too, but she's great in this. She's great in this. That haircut, that the bangs of the bob or whatever they gave her, she was almost recognizable in this. But her kill in this movie.
No,
dude, I loved it. How you didn't like it? How did you not like that?
I hate CGI blood. I hate it.
But
every
dude,
time I see CGI blood spray, it just takes me right out of
Brian,
the movie. It looks
it's
fake.
It's in all everything now.
That's, well, no, not everything. That's almost my problem. Everything. That's my problem, though, is that, like, you very easily, because, okay, if you've seen the trailer, you see what happens to her character. By the way, the trailer spoiled pretty much all of the film's good moments, but I'm serious. Anyway,
disagreeing.
Anyway, so she gets her arm taken off. That very into easily
giant,
could have been...
into a giant sphere, which I don't...
Phantasm
think that
reference?
It may have been. I was thinking in my head, there may have been a, you know...
Because it sprays the blood out like the
That's what I'm saying. That's
Phantasm.
Why I love the kill. It's great. And what I love even more about that kill is that she lays there, bleeds out to death on the floor at the museum. And then in the
Everyone
morning,
thinks-
a group of kids come in for a class to see the art exhibits, and they think that the dead body's part of the exhibit, and all these kids are playing in the blood, which wasn't CG blood, mind you. It was real puddles of fake blood.
That was fake
blood. And they're just,
blood.
Like, playing with it and walking around in it, and you see the
prints. That was clever.
Loved that.
That was
Loved
clever.
It. Brilliant. Thought it was great.
The kill itself, though, when she, like, when the blood sprang out of the wound, it looks so phony and fake.
You know what?
Awful.
I gotta say, I thought it was fine.
Okay.
But I can't believe we have not mentioned this yet. The most important thing about this movie, the coolest thing about this movie, is that, yes, the Hopester himself got a job being cast in this movie as a robot hobo. That's right. He's in
hobo
this
man.
Movie.
Hey,
hobo
you
man.
Over there.
And he stalks. He stalks in this movie, and he attacks in this movie. He's a brutal force to be reckoned with.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of him.
Me too. It's great to see him in a feature film. That was another element that I feel like the film could have expanded upon too.
The Hopester?
Like, yeah, I wanted to see more of the Hopester. I wanted to see more of Hobo Man. I wanted to see more of these horror elements. And I feel like the film was like juggling all these characters and all, like, I don't know. I guess the film needs to have a body count, but I don't know. To me, none of these characters were likable or interesting. You have David Diggs, who's, you know, was just amazing in Blindspotting. You cast an amazing actor like David Diggs, and you don't give him
anything. He doesn't really
do
anything.
Do.
No, he kind of he's supposed to be this prolific new urban artist, and we never see any of his artwork. Number one. Number two, he kind of just sleeps with Josefina, the intern, and then decides not to work with her art dealer company, and then he's like out of it. He's like not even a part of it.
What is he doing, like, in the movie?
He's just hanging around. He literally is just hanging around at these art shows and just sitting there. He's just in the frame of the shot. That's it.
And what is again, I'm gonna ask, what is John Malkovich doing in this movie? Because his character doesn't impact anything at all. And then again,
well, he's there because it causes the friction between the two separate art dealers, and then that in essence creates the one art dealer's kill. He dies because he gets involved with the new artwork, and then he gets killed, and his death is really lackluster. God damn, was that? I'm like, how many times have I seen that kill? That was the other thing. If you're coming up with this creative premise, if you're coming up with something so interesting, and then you don't follow through with it in creative ways, it's going to turn out being kind of boring. That's kind of how I felt after I watched this movie. I felt disappointed in it. And what it did with the ending, with the title and everything, the tattoo and everything, all right.
I don't even understand how that is supposed to work.
No,
I thought that it was the artist, the spirit of the artist coming back and possessing possessing the works of art. I guess a tattoo could be considered a work of art.
Of course it is. You're sitting, you're looking at me, and I'm covered in them, and of course it's artwork.
He's just playing with his goddamn nipples.
I can't help it. I'm wearing the tank top and everything. They're sore, man. I got to do it. No one else is going to do it. So yeah, no, that to me is how I kind of imagined it in my head. But overall, I really don't know where Gilroy and company are going to go from here. I still think Gyllenhaal and everyone involved, as far as the talent's concerned, really did a great job. Rene Russo is very good in it, is a very brutal.
I was about to say, the MVPs are Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo, Toni Collette, and Natalia Dyer. They are the ones who really make this movie worth watching. There are some lines that are really, really funny, as we kind of touched on. Some of the dialogue is very clever and very sharp. Dan Gilroy definitely has an an ear for kind of that snarky kind of dialogue. And it is very, I mean, it's not subtle, but I don't think subtlety is Gilroy's goal here. I think he's, is this supposed to be over the top and goofy? Because if it is, it wasn't goofy enough.
No, that's what I'm saying. That was what I was talking about with Gyllenhaal's performance. He's that, he's at that notch right below full overblown try hard performance. He's right there underneath it. And he's really good in it. But I can't help but laugh at him because he is playing a very over-the-top character. But at the same time, there are people identical to that, that act just like that, that look just like that. So, I mean, he's playing it for real. And also, I'm sure you were excited when he took his shirt off, Loy Sauce, because he had those motherfucking abs in your face.
Yeah, he. If you want to see Gyllenhaal's butt multiple times throughout the film, then this is definitely going to be up your alley. And he has the, you know, body hair and everything. That's very attractive. But
yeah,
his character is an asshole, and I hated him, and I wanted him to die.
See, I liked him. I kind of liked him because I mean,
he was an asshole.
Well, he is, but I liked him because he had funny things to say.
He's not as lovable, nearly as lovable as his character Nightcrawler. That was such a charming performance.
But the difference is in Nightcrawler, he's a really bad dude, but he's just really dedicated to his cause, and he's going to stop at nothing to get his way. Way different kinds of movies. This is nowhere near on the level of Nightcrawler. No. Not even halfway near being there. So for me, extremely disappointing. I'm not going to tell people not to watch it. It may be for you. The scary parts aren't scary enough. The brutal parts are nowhere near brutal enough. I did chuckle a few times. And it's one of the most visually uninteresting things to look at. To think about a movie about fine art and art coming alive and causing people to die, it just wasn't shot very interestingly. It didn't.
No.
It wasn't beautiful looking.
You know who should have directed this movie is Tom Ford. Get
imagine
Tom
that.
Ford to direct.
Yeah. Imagine that. Now, I'll keep the Gilroy script. You do a couple passes on it and have Tom Ford direct it. Would have been perfect. Play it straight. But for me, this is going to be a 6 out of 10. It's my lowest recommendation.
That's high.
No, it's not. Because I still feel like people that liked Nightcrawler might get something out of this. I've seen a few other people that have seen it that have at least enjoyed it for what it was. I'm not going to give it a failing rating, even though it was disappointing. I still liked enough about it where I could say, I'm glad I watched it.
You know what this movie really needed? It needed Danny DeVito in a white wig. have him play Ongo Gablogian, the art collector from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That would have made the movie complete to have Danny DeVito play Ongo Gablogian. Yeah, I'm going to give this movie a...
Spit it out.
I'll give it a... Five out of 10. It's no Bird Box. Bird Box is the worst thing I've ever seen. This is a little bit classier. It has, it's a very low brow, approach to a very high brow, world. I kind of liked that approach, but it needed to be schlockier. It needed to be sexier.
It's not sexy at all.
No, as it stands. Yeah. Well, aside from those shots of Jake Gyllenhaal, working on a laptop and he's in his glasses and he's completely naked. Like that made me chuckle. And, you know, that's obviously eye candy, but it's the sex scenes between him and Josefina were so awkward. They had no chemistry at all. And it was just, ugh. Yeah.
She was yuck too in every possible way. And you know,
what
you
a
know,
bad performance that really dragged the movie
and,
down.
You know,
for me.
I got to say this much too. And I've been making this complaint, and I know you may disagree with me, but this looked like it was shot like a Netflix show. It didn't look like to me that it was shot like a movie.
No, Nightcrawler was, comparing, but that movie looked cinematic. That looked...
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like this look... I wonder if it would be different because I watched it on my TV versus at the theater, but it just didn't like how it looked at all. And the way it was shot and the way it looked like it was staged, you know,
well, it there was
blocked, the camera, like a TV show.
Yeah. The camera didn't really move at all. I mean, there were some like drone shots that were like, drone shot of LA, but it wasn't, the camera didn't move. There wasn't really any interesting cinematography happening. It was all very flat and boring and drab, which again, considering it's a movie about fine art, like I don't know, it needed a sense of style, it needed a sense of anything.
It needed some energy. It really needed some energy.
Yeah, I was bored.
Yeah.
I was bored by this movie.
There it is. That's it. Velvet Buzzsaw, 6 out of 10 for me, 5 out of 10 for the sauce. Watch it,
but or
be
don't.
Careful. Be careful. At your own risk, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. So we are going to run over into another break, and then when we come back, we've got a little bit of epic previews from the Super Bowl.
Have you ever watched an absolutely terrible movie and thought to yourself, what were they thinking?
Because we sure have.
So much so that we named our podcast after it.
What Were They Thinking?
Starring me, Nathan.
And Brendan.
Every other week, we take a bad to questionable movie and unpack it, so you don't have to.
And then every other week, we A your Q's with our mailbag.
Or, you know, talk about whatever.
Yeah, no big whoop.
No big whoop at all. So that's What Were They Thinking?
You can catch us on Podbean, YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more.
Also, a ton of platforms that Brendan made up.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us here on another thrilling episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thrilling, exciting, action-packed. These are all words that I would not use to describe a trailer that we're going to talk about in Epic Previews.
In the world of Endicott, New York and Herndon, Virginia, two Epic Film Guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
I really want to get this out of the way as quickly as humanly possible.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about the 400-hour-long, at least it felt like that when I watched it, trailer for Hobbs and Shaw, or Shaw. What the fuck is it even? I don't even know what
Hobbs
it's called.
Hobbs and Shaw.
It's Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Holy fuck, this movie looks like a bag of ass.
I'm dealing with the future of the planet. I'm the necessary shock to the system. I am human evolutionary change. Bulletproof. Superhuman.
Who the hell are you?
Bad guy.
The mission has been compromised. We need help.
Just a giant... The trailer is so fucking long. Why is it so long?
They're trying to bring back the olden days when trailers were like 6 minutes long each, because there wasn't like 10 movies being released in a given week.
If I saw this trailer in a theater, I would legitimately be mad that it was going
on.
Well,
you're probably going
to.
So prepare yourself.
Oh my god, I will hang myself in the theater.
Here's the thing. Do you remember when these movies used to be about street racing?
I mean, I've never seen any of them, so no, but...
Well, okay, but at one point, they used to be about street racing. And now they've decided to throw in the towel completely and just go, we're a superhero franchise
now.
Dude.
Idris Elba's character is fucking superpowered. He's superhuman. Dude, he could be shot with guns and still live. This is totally jumping the shark. I mean, you had said pre-show, they already jumped the shark, but the last one I saw was 7, and I thought 7 was a genuinely good action, fun blockbuster. Silly,
yeah, but how many,
but
yeah.
Still, they weren't
how
jumping
many of
the shark.
Stunts, how many of the stunts in Furious 7 are like realistic in any way whatsoever?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, dude, they're like, I don't know. I don't have anything to say about this. We posted the trailer as soon as it landed the other day, and the reaction is pretty crazy from fans of this series, because they're like, what the fuck's, what are you guys doing? What is this? Now, I know what it is. This is The Rock's way of not having to work with Vin Diesel again, because those guys butted heads on the last two of them that they did together, and they're refusing to work together on another one of them. So The Rock said, basically, this is my out. I'm done. He wanted to do this spinoff, and he will not be doing the next Furious movie with Vin Diesel. You know, obviously, I assume they're going to make another one with him. So he wants to take the reins. This is his way of saying, hey, look, I'm a bigger box office star than you, and he's probably right. So I don't know. The action in this
does anyone actually genuinely like Vin Diesel? I mean, does anyone go to a movie and say, oh, the new Vin Diesel movie?
Dude, there are plenty of guys from Jersey, Brian, okay? There's plenty of bass heads, okay? There's plenty of gorillas out there that they idolize that guy. I actually have seen people have had portraits done on like their bicep of Vin Diesel.
What?
Yes.
No way.
Yes, dude. Search Google and search Vin Diesel tattoo or Vin Diesel portrait tattoo.
Tattoos of all sorts of dumb shit. I saw online yesterday somebody had a tattoo of Super Bowl champions, the Los Angeles Rams.
Oh no!
That happens every year though, Nick. And I think those guys. There are those guys at the bar, though, that take pride in the stupidity, and they're going to get laughs, and they're fine with it. Whatever.
It's just
speaking of taking pride in stupidity, Hobbs and Shaw, I really part of me kind of appreciates how like the sheer gall of these filmmakers just say, we'll just have them jump off buildings.
This trailer literally felt like the fuck it of trailers. Like, we're going to throw everything.
Like, just fuck it.
And the kitchen sink in this movie. We don't care. We're just going to do whatever we can to. I mean, I guess kudos to them for just doing whatever they want to do or they think they can do to try to make an entertaining movie. I mean,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
If at the end of the day, it's good or it's entertaining or what. My biggest problem is the length of the trailer. It goes on an eternity. Like, this whole time we're talking, if I back this whole talking segment with the trailer, it's probably still going on. Still.
Nick, just if you're complaining about the trailer, think about how long the movie's gonna
good
be.
Good fucking lord. It's probably gonna be like 4 hours, because they just do not give a fuck anymore.
You know what, though? I'll be honest. I don't think you had mentioned to me, Loisos, when it was first released, you texted me and you were like, the action looks pretty well put together. And I'm like, well, it has to, because that's what the meat and potatoes of this thing is the action. And I'm not going to lie. I think the action, the car stuff still looks cool. And obviously most of it is green screen and CGI. But am I going to see this movie? Most likely, I probably will see it. I probably will.
But here's the thing, too. I'm sick to death of Dwayne Johnson.
No, it's true.
I want him off my screens.
We got to make this statement now. We got to say it publicly. The guy's worn out his welcome. I've already said it on the show, but I mean, literally, I think this might be him knowing that and really trying to cram out as much material as possible while he still has his name up there in the lights, though they're starting to slowly dim. Do it while you're there, you know? He's still one of the bigger box office draws. I think it was, 2 years ago? He was like the biggest box office actor or something. So
I mean, Jumanji made so much money. So much money.
I can't wait for the sequel to that movie. I really can't.
Really? Wait, did you like Jumanji?
I loved Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, okay, I liked it. I mean, Jack Black is a 16-year-old girl. It was legitimately perfect.
Jack Black is the MVP of that movie. And 100%. Also, Karen Gillan's midriff.
Also, yes.
That's about it.
I haven't seen a lot of the other Kevin Hart and The Rock movies, so their shtick hasn't worn on me like it has on a lot of people. So
I actually never saw Central Intelligence.
I never wanted to, because I was like, oh, the joke is that he's little and he's big. I get it.
Yeah. Although it did have one of the best taglines to a movie ever on the poster. It had obviously The Rock and Kevin Hart side by side, and the tagline was "Saving the world takes a little heart and a big Johnson." And I'm like, that's really clever.
It's a euphemism for penis.
It is.
You rarely see things that clever in today's movie marketing. But ladies and gentlemen, let's move past Hobbs and
that's
Shaw.
That's really still playing in the background, by the way. It's still going.
I'm sure it is. We're going to talk about something right now that I know, Loislaus, you've been looking forward to your whole life. And it's something that, for me, rings true to my childhood. Going back... Nick, do you remember, I think this was probably past your time, Loislaus, but do you remember book fairs at school?
Oh, yeah.
What? Of course I remember those.
Okay. I don't know if they still existed in the late 90s, early 2000s when you were going
last
to school.
Last year.
Yeah.
Last year. But I remember being, you know, they'd come to school, come to the local library, and they'd open up like those big metal like book stands, and then
that's right.
You could look at the books, and you'd get off, you'd have to go to class.
You'd get off.
You could buy books. Yeah, you'd get off.
Wow.
Looking
you
at
get
books,
off and how many
books are sexy, especially books like these with beautiful artwork on them, like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, gruesome, scary, spooky,
way to take
terrifying.
That and turn it into a segue.
Oh yeah, baby! And so it's been announced a while back that Guillermo del Toro is going to be producing a movie based on these short stories, and we finally got released yesterday 4 mini teasers. And so I got to throw it right to you, Saucy. Are these visually, at least, living up to the hype?
I think we should stop calling this show the Epic Film Guys Show and start calling ourselves the Epic Scary Stories Guys Show, because I feel like this is going to now turn into a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark appreciation podcast, because this is all I can think about is seeing this movie. I want to see this movie now. I want to do nothing but talk about this movie. I want the full trailer now.
Yeah,
I love
these.
Yeah,
I thought it was a weird choice for them to release 4 mini teasers, but I see the exposure that it got, so I kind of understand it from a marketing standpoint.
As someone who just wants to see the damn movie already, I want to see as much as possible. 4 trailers did nothing to whet my appetite, but it looks like they have completely nailed the aesthetic of Stephen Gamel's illustrations. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant illustrations that haunted me and kept me up for many nights. I've read the plot synopsis, and I don't know. I see where they're going with it.
It takes place in the 60s, right?
Yeah, which is cool. But the whole teenagers in peril thing, it's like, it's been done to death.
They're
going to
do it again. They're going to do it again. They're going to do Stranger Things again.
Yeah.
But you might get to see a kid get stabbed.
I mean, that's true. And that's, I mean, you have the one girl's spiders coming out of her cheek. I mean, that was one of the ones that disturbed me the most as a kid. That story of like the spiders laying eggs in the girl's face. But anyway, I wish it were like an anthology series. I understand why it's not an anthology series, because they don't technically.
They don't play in the theaters.
No, they don't.
See, that's
they
for don't. Somebody who has nothing to do, like no idea what the series is about at all. I thought that they released these 4 little snippets because it was an anthology series, and these were like all different little stories. Okay, see, I'm way more confused about what this is than I was then.
the story is like this girl in town who is like writing down these stories, and then they come to life like the Goosebumps movie. Hopefully not as scarier than the Goosebumps movie.
Quite
but,
that.
Del Toro is in the corner of this thing. I really think at least visually they're going to nail it. And as long as it has that Del Toro look and feel to it in some way, shape, or form, I think that we're really in for a treat.
Which I think it does that, especially the hallway scene with the pale woman. With the stringy hair and the creepy, that's something like right out of Crimson Peak or The Devil's Backbone. So, I mean, they got the look down. They really have. We haven't heard much from Nick. I don't know if he has much of an opinion on this.
I mean, they were effectively creepy. I mean, with something this short, and when literally your runtime is 10 seconds, and like 4
that's
of it
problem.
Is. from the mind of Guillermo del Toro, so you only really get like 5 seconds of actual footage. There's not really much you can delve into, but I will say, like, aesthetically, they are insanely creepy. Like, super fucking creepy. Like, creepier than jizz on a hand touching a seat. Creepy. That's, I'm sorry, I cannot get Cronenberg's Crash out of my mind. I can't. It's in there. It's going to live in there forever.
Now you just have to watch The Fly, Nick. Now you just have to watch
every
The Fly,
movie-going
bro.
Experience I ever have for the rest of my life. I'm just going to see people sucking tattoos and fucking leg vaginas.
But I'm proud of you, though. I got to say.
They're effectively creepy. They're definitely very atmospheric. They have like really interesting creature designs, I think, in the ones that have like the different creatures.
There is one.
I was just confused because I thought it was an anthology series. So I was like, oh, this makes sense that they're all these different things. Okay. Nope. So it's all, I mean, even still, I think atmospherically for the little morsel, see Hobbs and Shaw, morsel, like a little tiny bit. And now we can look at it and be like, oh man, I wonder what this is going to look like when you expand it out into a whole world, into a whole film. Not here's the whole fucking movie. And that trailer's still playing, by the way. The fucking thing, like it's I think it's very effective, and yeah, I think maybe if you would have done like 2 20 or 30 second teasers, maybe it would have been a little more effective, and maybe it would have whetted the appetites of people like Loisas, who are like, I love this series, give it all to me right now. But I think it was effective.
I'm reading the plot synopsis right now. It's literally the Goosebumps movie. She's turned her life into a series of scary stories written in a book. Stories that have a way of becoming all too real for a group of teenagers who discover it.
I thought that one lady in the hallway looked like Jack Black, like a little bit. So,
just imagine this being done with that premise, but done rated R and very scary and dark.
Well, I hope it's rated R. I hope they don't make it PG-13.
It goddamn better be.
The biggest missed opportunity with the Goosebumps movie, which I never saw the second one, but the first one at least, even though I enjoyed Jack Black's performance, even though it was a fun movie for kids, like, it was not scary at all.
No, it wasn't. I enjoyed it as well, but
with Goosebumps, like, you could have made that into a kind of a gateway horror film for kids. And with this, like, at least I know that there's going to be some creepy images and stuff to take away from it, because it looks like they stuck as closely to the illustrations as possible, which are, again, are pants shittingly terrifying. There is one creature who appears in the teaser spots that is nowhere to be found in the book, so I'm wondering how much new material they'll come up with, considering how much can be mined from the books. But this is just my inner nerd coming out now. But anyhow,
well, there's one good thing about this as well, is that the director, the Norwegian director Andre Overdahl, also directed The Autopsy of Jane Doe and Troll Hunter.
Well, Troll Hunter's awesome. Jane Doe is fine. There's like one or two creepy moments in that movie. But
at least visually, I think he has that aesthetic going for him. So I think he's
he's talented, yeah.
But I think a lot of fans are disappointed, because a lot of people, when they see that from the mind of Guillermo del Toro, they're under the impression he's directing it. I'm imagining in my head, why didn't you just direct it? But I mean, I know he's an Academy Award winning director.
He's directing Pinocchio now.
I know.
That animated Pinocchio.
Which he says will be very dark. So
I just want my Guillermo del Toro Haunted Mansion movie. That's all I want.
Well, the closest you're going to get was Crimson Peak, and you already have it. So that's that for that, buddy. But I'm really excited for this. It looks, like I said, visually stunning.
I think the little teasers were effective. I think they were very, very creepy, and they definitely intrigued me in the sense of, oh, man, I'd like to see more of that. Less Hobbs and Shaw, please, for the love of God.
You have to see Hobbs and Shaw now.
I already did. I already saw the whole fucking trailer.
No,
it's still playing in my head.
You have to go to the theater and watch it.
You know, the other thing, it's that trailer ruins now for me Lethal Weapon 4, which, love or hate that movie, though you will, that movie closes out with an amazing montage of just set photos and like photos of all four movies set to the song Why Can't We Be Friends. And I adore that montage that closes out like the whole Lethal Weapon series. So now this trailer has ruined it for me. Thank you, Hobbs and Shaw.
Nick, don't you mean Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw?
Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. Thank you so much for tuning into yet another episode of the Epic Film Guys. There was some other stuff that dropped during the Super Bowl, but nothing that really looked all that intriguing to me.
Nothing we care about.
Nothing that I'm interested in seeing more for. Like, there was a little little blurb, little spot that played for Jordan Peele's Us, which is, again, I think I could speak for Loisos as well, even though he wasn't on the show last week, but all of our most anticipated lists for this year. Really, really excited, but I don't need to see any more about that. That first trailer is so good that I just don't even want to see any more material from that movie. I just want to see the movie. Don't even
damn
care.
Right.
And like the superhero stuff, yeah, fine. We're going to see it anyway, so whatever. And like Wonder Park, who gives a shit? Loisos is going to, you know, petition against Toy Story 4 forever.
I think I'm just going to respectfully just stay far away from Toy Story 4.
What if, I mean, it's Pixar, so it's probably going to be well reviewed anyway, but what if it's like 99% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Here's the thing.
What if I see it and I'm like, it's the greatest movie of all time?
Well, that's not going to happen. I think I was just so unbelievably burned by The Incredibles 2.
I'm like the only guy I know that didn't give like a 9 or a 10 out of 10 to Toy Story 3.
The Incredibles 2 is one of the most disappointing things I've ever seen, ever. I just couldn't even believe how lazy and sloppy it was. So,
I mean, Loisos is definitely on the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse train for the Oscars. Please, God.
Are you kidding me? If Incredibles 2 wins over Spider-Man, I'm leaving this planet.
I stated on Twitter earlier in the week because somebody posted something on there. I said, if Bohemian Rhapsody wins Best Picture, I'm never watching the Oscars again. I'll literally riot. It will literally become the farce and the joke that I've always felt it was becoming.
It's a very distinct possibility.
I will hang myself. I'd rather Vice win, and I'd rather somebody drive a railroad spike into my forehead than even make me think about watching Vice again. Holy fuck, that movie's a piece of shit. Fuck you, Adam McKay. I want to take a shit in his mouth. Like, just
sit him
on the floor.
You said that like over and over again last week. You must be still really angry about that.
I hated that
movie.
Fucking movie. So
I can't
much.
Wait to watch it. I can't wait to watch it.
I also did not care for Vice, so I'm curious to hear Justin's thoughts. But that was
Justin's gonna love it just to piss me off.
Yeah, I think that's gonna be the case. I think what I hated most about it is that it had such contempt for its viewing audience.
Yeah,
like that, Adam McKay thinks we're a bunch of dummies.
That was it for me.
Yeah, Adam McKay thinks we're a bunch of dummies.
The new Fast and the Furious movie looks lit. No, it doesn't. By the way, Hobbs and Shaw looks like garbage. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Find us literally everywhere around the web, social media, at Epic Film Guys, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, podcatchers, literally everywhere, Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker, Podbean, where we're hosted. We love you, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, everywhere. We are everywhere. And as I said earlier in the show, as Justin said, we're whores. We literally appear on every show under the sun.
Yeah, we get around.
Mm-hmm. We that should be our new tagline, Epic Film Guys. We get around.
I think you mean Epic Scary Stories, guys.
There you go. So, again, catch me on a brand new Soy Married a Movie Geek that is out now. Catch me on an upcoming Two Peas on a Podcast talking top five Quentin Tarantino characters and Justin talking top five remakes. If you love the show and if you want early-ish access to episodes, I get them released like the night before they normally come out. But sometimes you get extra content, you get extended content, you get at different levels, you get free swag, $20 level loot boxes. You can even be an executive producer at the top level. Join us on Patreon. Big thanks to Julio Oliveira of the Contrarians podcast joining us on Patreon at the $5 level. Thank you so much, Julio. We love you. And he gets a huge kick out of all of our reviews. He really, really does. And he'll often goad me on Twitter and be like, man, I can't wait until Nick sees this movie. We love you, Julio. Thank you very much for joining us over on Patreon. You too can join us over there, patreon.com/epicfilmguys. Just pledge over there. Like I said, $1 gets you access to, like, we did a year and a half's worth of extended episodes. Sometimes if there's extra content, we'll still throw that in there over on Patreon, and you just get all sorts of other little random goodies from time to time. And I still need to host that first ever live Q&A, but I haven't planned it yet and I haven't scheduled it yet. I'll get to that. I swear. I promise. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, set your calendars. Live stream for The Cure 3, May 17th to the 19th, 40 hours, $7,500 to raise money for cancer research. It's happening. It's going to be absolutely amazing. I've been reaching out. We're going to start building now. My goal this month is to build the prize that we're going to give away to the top donor. I'm going to be reaching out, trying to get different stuff from literally everywhere. And, you know, see if we can't make that like super, super high value, to see if we can entice people to come in and watch. But mark your calendars. It's going to be an absolutely amazing event. We had a blast last year. We've got a lot of guests returning this year. A lot of first-time guests as well. Fantasy Movie Draft is coming. Winners is bringing that. I'm so excited to do that. It's just going to be an amazing time. Please, please, please set your calendars. And it's all for a very, very, very good cause, especially if you're a new listener. You're not really familiar with it. You can go back on YouTube and you can watch all of last year's like 34 hours that we did. Or I've released like different episodes all throughout the year. Just little snippets, little segments from different shows that appear. What were they thinking? They did we did that anti-drug PSA, the cartoon thing from the 90s.
Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue.
My God,
that was fun.
They'll be back this year. That's going to be amazing. Robin Allen from Interrupted Tales, they're going to be back this year. Heather from Sunshine and Power Cuts, she's going to be back this year. I'm also going to be on the Sunshine Summit again this March. More details on that when I remember them, because I can't remember when I'm scheduled for that right now. Yeah. But yeah, so much more stuff coming from the Epic Film Guys. And of course, we've got our 2010s retrospective series that we're going to plug in here and there whenever we get the chance, or whenever we don't have anything else to talk about. So, yeah, that's Justin's like, man, when is he going to stop talking and end the goddamn show? Rub your nipples and shut up. Ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so, so much for listening to the show. If this is your first time listening, welcome. We would really, really appreciate it. Head over to Apple Podcasts. Throw us a 5-star review. We'd really, really appreciate it. Push us up there. Let us reach a wider audience. And if you're a returning listener, we love you. Thank you so, so much for being here. Whether you're, you've been listening for a week, or if you're Destruction in Human Form and you've been listening since the very beginning, we love you. We love all of you. Thank you so, so much, everybody out there, for tuning into the show. For myself, for Justin, for the God of Podcasting, ladies and gentlemen, the sauce. Now is when we appropriately pause for silence. That's correct. Thank you all so, so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And until next time,
we will see you
at the movies.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so, so much for listening to the show. If this is your first time, thank you. If this is the last time, this isn't the last. This is the last.
What the fuck? If this is the last time.
Good night, everyone.
There we go. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, if this is your first time listening. Yeah. Not fucking get it. If this is your first time listening to the show, fuck. Shut up, boys.
I didn't say anything. Although, if it is their last time listening to the show, then I take full responsibility for it.
You've offended all of the non-scary stories enthusiasts. That's what it is.
I've offended everyone with my rambling Lego 2 and How to Train Your Dragon reviews.
Son of a bitch.
Are you hungry, sir? Do you want to eat a fart?
No, thank you. I'm
full.
If
you want, you can open your pants up and a fart on your wiener.
You and I were just talking about what they're going to name Star Wars Episode 9, and now you're telling me they're going to unleash the title on us tomorrow.
Star Wars Episode 9, Porg.
No, it ain't going to be called that.
Rise of the Porg.
I think it'll be called Return... hold on. I think it'll be called...
Return of the Jedi.
No, I think it'll be called the Jedi Returns.
You know what Ghost it's going to really be called? It's going to be called Episode 9, the real Episode 8, and they're going to erase.
Yeah, they're going to call it Star Wars Episode 9. Please forgive us. Here's all the fan service you could ever possibly want. Whatever. The Last Jedi is still one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
That is correct.
We all agree on that.